Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jason Mitchell back on the show. It's been a little while since we've had him on, so we got some great catching up to do, and then we're going to deep dive into some summer walleye conversation. That being said, if there's ever a time of year to really keep your options open and keep an open mind, that is the theme of this episode. And so another great one with Jason Mitchell. Let's get to it.
TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Check out a complete listing of products at TKICNC.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKICNC. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. And get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. We kind of know a couple of topics that we might try to get into here, Jason, but let's get a little bit updated. Like the last 6 weeks, I mean, we haven't talked about a whole lot of anything on the podcast here. So get us a little bit up to speed. Kind of the last month or so of all of your travels. And I know you've been doing a whole lot of fishing. So let's just share that with the people for starters. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you know, a lot of fishing back home around North Dakota, you know, Devil's Lake. I've been on Devil's Lake quite a bit. And then I'm actually going to film on Devil's Lake here this week. And then we've been on Lake Sakakawea. You and I got together on Lake Audubon and filmed some smallmouths. That was a good time. I mean, that's some crazy good fishing. And then, goodness, where else have we been? We were out in the Yellowstone River in Montana and did the Channel Cats out there. We just got done filming on Lake Winnipegosh, northern Minnesota, and that was a jig and live bait bite overall, although we did catch a few fish on slip bobbers. What else have we done? Northeast South Dakota, Glacial Lakes country. We did some jigs and plastics down there for walleyes. That was a great bite. Obviously, you know, when you watch a TV show or even watch a YouTube video, it's kind of the highlights, you know. One thing I will say about this year is, you know, we've had a lot of fronts, a lot of wind, you know, some rain. Been kind of a different year where it feels like you just start to get into a groove and you start to put a pattern together. And then the next day, the wind's 30 miles an hour out of a different direction. And what you had working dried up. And so you got to pivot a lot and change. And so, you know, in some ways I would, you know, honestly, I would describe the bite in a lot of places, you know, at least around home where I've been spending the most time, is kind of sporadic, you know, Where it's good enough. But you think, boy, if we can just get some warmer water temperatures and just some more stable weather without all the wind, it's going to get a lot better, you know, and that's kind of what we're looking at now is, you know, going into July. And you know, one thing I'll point out, too, is that across the board, water temperatures have been kind of slow to warm up. They've just been kind of hanging. And for the most part, they've been cooler than what I would consider normal, you know, what most years are. And we've had these kind of springs or these kind of early summers before. And it seems like what happens is it almost like it prolongs the bite into the summer, if that makes any sense, where it almost feels like some of this good fishing happens later in the summer and it lasts longer. And so sometimes when you get all this wind and rain and, you know, different things that kind of screw up the overall scheme, sometimes in the big picture, it works in your favor. And I think that's kind of what we're looking at, you know, going into the summer here of 2025.
When you see the slower water temps, like slower to warm up, do you feel like that, like
thinking about finding fish, do you feel like it slows down the fish movement? Because you think about like early summer, like the post-spawn bite, like it's transition time. The fish are on the move from spawning grounds, you know, to the summer haunts. Does it slow down the movement, or do they maybe move the same, but it changes their appetite? Like, I'm just sort of curious how you wrap your head around some of that, maybe we'll call it unseasonably cold, or just, you know, just the, how often we've had those cool nights so far this year.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe all of the above. I'm not 100% sure. I'm just talking, you know, just from all the years I can remember, you know, guiding where we were just, you know, had a lot of boats on the water every day where you kind of see, you know, baseline trends, you know, they become obvious, you know, it just seems like, I would say as a rule of thumb, you know, you look at post spawn patterns, right? From, end of May till, you know, the 4th of July, you know, there's always some really, really good fishing that happens every year. And those spots, those patterns are kind of the same every year where the fish are kind of doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I think people are pretty in tune to that, you know, whether it's shoreline structure, points, certain depths, you know, they're pretty in tune to that, where that's a time where most people can go out and catch fish pretty consistently. And then on a lot of bodies of water, traditionally, you know, things would get tougher as that water warmed up and then you moved into that midsummer, you know, call it the dog days of summer. And I think one of the things that happens is that, you know, a lot of fish pull out over deeper water and they pull out off of that structure, especially when they suspend, you know. And now with forward facing sonar, that's changing that game, where some people are just licking their chops in July and August because, you know, that's completely changed it. But historically, you know, on a lot of bodies of water, you know, that bite would get tougher. The fish are still there. And if anything, they're eating now, you know, when the water temperatures warm up, they're eating more than any other time of the year, you know. But why is the fishing tougher? Is it because there's more bait? Is there more bug hatches happening? You know, there's just different things. But as a rule of thumb, you know, on a lot of different bodies of water, you know, things would get tougher as the summer progressed, you know. And obviously, you know, forward-facing sonar is changing that. We're learning a lot from that. But when you get those cold, windy, wet springs where that warming water temperature is kind of delayed, it's almost like some of those patterns last a lot longer. Instead of some of those patterns holding up for, say, 3 weeks, or generalities holding up for 3 weeks, you know, they get extended for a month and a half, you know. And so I've seen that over and over, you know, everything from weed life cycles to, I mean, you name it. I mean, it just seems like it prolongs some things that were, as a angling community, that we're pretty tuned in on, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that's a fun thing. You know, Nick Linder, actually, just, I'm a big fan of his on YouTube. Like, he put out a video talking about like July or like summer patterns, you know, probably more so representing like the Minnesota lakes and stuff that he's on, but just generally July, you know, he's talking about how, you know, predictable, you know, just reminding people it you can find fish, it's more predictable. And I think forward sonar kind of created that. You think like 10 years ago, the summer was like you said, a head scratcher for a lot of people. You know, the spring and fall is when you're, but nowadays you're right. People are licking their chops in July and August. You know, they call out in Green Bay, they say Hoggest, because in August when it's hot, you know, they're out there. But again, that suspended bite is a big part of that conversation. Forward sonar is a big part of that conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think, you know, I think, you know, looking back, right, in, I guess, just my own evolution as an angler, we knew that walleye suspended, right? I mean, we caught walleyes, you know, trolling crankbaits with planer boards and different things. But I don't really know if we understood the extent of how much walleye suspend on a lot of lakes that maybe didn't have the reputation for walleye suspending. You know, as a deal where you go out to Green Bay, for example, and pull harnesses or crankbaits on boards or Lake Erie, you know, the Great Lakes especially, right? You know, anglers have been in tune to that for a long time, but then you talk to somebody in northern Minnesota and, oh, our walleyes are in structure, our walleyes don't suspend to like Great Lakes. Well, the reality is that they do, and we know that now. And maybe people didn't have a handle on it, say, 20 years ago. And And even if, and I'm and not necessarily even, you know, sometimes, yeah, see fish right below the surface or halfway down the water column, they're all over the board. But as a rule of thumb, I think what's really peculiar is how get later on in the summer, and goodness, I mean, I hardly even see walleyes on the bottom. Like, it's like, how did we ever catch them before? Well, I guess there's times where a lot of times we didn't. The bite was tough, you know, or you're waiting for these windows where the fish are on the bottom, but it's just such a small part of the day. And I think that's one of the reasons that glide baits, you know, came on so strong, you know, I don't know, was it 10, 15 years ago, you know, people pitching and using jigging wraps, you know, at the time, is that, you know, you know, it's interesting, you know, talking about like glide baits, when they first come on, it was so fascinating to me because I could be in a spot and I could be throwing, say, a jig in a half crawl or whatever, and, or dragging a live bait rig, whatever it is that we were using at the time, and just catching a few fish, but pulling my hair out because you could see that there's more of them than what you caught, you know, and why can't I catch these fish? And then it's almost like then you throw a jigging wrap at those same fish, and it was like turning a light switch on how profound it was, in the sense you could be spinning out for an hour and a half, 2 hours in an area, just pulling your hair out, and then pick up a jigging wrap and make a cast, and bam, catch a fish immediately. Three casts later, bam, catch another fish. It was like turning on a light switch at times, and that was so profound. And I remember thinking, oh, you know, and at the time, you know, thinking, oh, it's a reaction bite. These walleyes are laying on the bottom. That jigging wrap is just erratic, and it's just creating this reaction bite. Well, you know what? Every bite's a reaction bite. The fish sees the bait, and it reacts to it, right? And so I think that reaction thing is kind of, there's definitely times where fish are triggered by just something trying to get away, you know? But now that we're using forward-facing sonar, you know, I'm using active target too, you know, it's right in our face now. I was like, oh, all these fish are 6, 7, 8 feet off the bottom. And when I snap that jigging wrap, it barely gets in front of them. They see it and then they chase it down. Whereas when I was fishing before, I was fishing way below the fish and I wasn't getting the attention of that fish. If that fish could have seen, I mean, you could pop a bottom bouncer and a spinner up 6, 7, 8 feet off the bottom and let it fall back down and the fish would chase that too, right? It's just that with the tail fin and the way those glide baits work is that when you pop that bait, it gets up in front of the fish and then they chase it down. Well, then once that clicks, it's like, oh, I can do that with a jigging plastic too, mm-hmm. You know? And what's interesting with forward-facing sonar, for example, is that, for example, I cast a jig out and I drag it with a sideways rod action. I just assumed all these years that the bait was dragging along the bottom, you know? And the reality is when you look at forward-facing sonar, it's almost like a, kind of like a bungee cord pendulum effect with the fishing line, where actually it's coming up off the bottom quite a ways. And you got to let it settle to get back down. Or if I pop that jig, you know, I'm just talking like a lead head jig and a minnow. I pop it with a 2 foot snap with a 6.5 foot rod. That bait is doing way more than popping 2 feet off the bottom. It's popping 4 or 5 feet and gliding, you know? And so, you know, maybe it's just me, but I mean, I had different things in my head as far as what these baits were doing on a cast or dragging them, you know, versus what the reality was. Does that make sense? And so now with the, you know, kind of with these lessons of forward facing sonar, as far as the things that we're learning, look at all the walleyes. I mean, there's 10 walleyes on this point. They're in three different pods and they're all 4 to 12 feet off the bottom. And, you know, when you cast it, some of them, they don't budge, but you cast it this one here and it chases it. It follows it 10 feet down in the water column. And then you pop it a couple more times on the bottom and it finally hits it after tracking it for 4 or 5 feet on the bottom, you know? And so the reality is that fish, you know, they have no problem chasing a bait down if it gets in front of them when they can see it. And, it's not like the fish crawl out of the lake in July and August, right? It's not like we have this crazy good fishing in May and June, and then in July and August, they crawl out of the lake and take a vacation, and they crawl back into the lake in the fall when the fishing gets good again. You know, and so I think the lesson that we're starting to learn is that the fishing can be really, really good in July and August through the dog days of summer. It's just that maybe we didn't quite have the right understanding of what was happening. And so, for example, for me, you know, traditional things that I would do in July and August, it worked really well. I love pulling lead core, crankbaits on lead core. I still feel like whenever there's good weeds, the outside edge of the weed line, you know, even if it's running a heavy bottom monster and a short snell, which we did just dropped a video on that, you and I filmed together. That's always a high batting average. Whenever you have good weeds, they'll hold fish through the summer. You know, offshore deep structure, especially if there's pelagic bait fish like smelt or cisco, that's always a solid option. That could be a rigging deal, that could be a vertical jigging deal. But then obviously there's, you know, the deep diving crankbait deal, you know, especially like on the reservoirs, you know, where we have a lot of history doing that, you know, running planer boards, you know. And obviously, you know, like on the red, like Sakakawea, for example, that's notorious for, you know, keeping your baits in say 25 to, you know, 32 feet of water and with boards and then sliding out over the channel where you get out over 50, 70, 80 feet of water, you know, picking up fish that are suspended, you know, along that channel. But, you know, with forward facing sonar now, we can see those suspended fish and then target them so much more specifically. You know, like we were just on Winnipegosh and, we caught a lot of fish in, oh, I don't know, 12 feet of water. Okay. That seemed to be kind of the magic depth. And, you know, most of the fish, they weren't super high up in the water column. They were 2 feet off the bottom, kind of about where you'd expect the walleyes to be right now. And some fish wanted to chase it down where you'd let it fall past them. And they would chase it down to the bottom and suck it up out of the bottom. But one of the things that was happening was there's a lot of slime and algae in the bottom. So if you got down to the bottom, your next move was really compromised, you know, in the sense that you just get all fouled up. And so we caught some fish doing that, getting the fish to chase down, sucking up out of the bottom. But we started catching fish also too, getting down to the level of the fish and then just kind of, you can almost hold your rod at like a 45 degree angle and twitch a jig and almost get it to hang anywhere you want in the water column by just watching the jig on the forward facing sonar and giving a little twitch, little quivery pops, and you just get it to kind of hang there and then just slowly pull it away, let it fall back down the appropriate place in the water column, twitch it some more. You can almost get that fish to move horizontally, you know, after the jig. And so, you know, I would say that probably caught, oh, I would say probably 65, 70% of our fish versus letting it fall past the fish. Both moves are worth playing with, but, you know, just, I guess just an observation just from some recent fishing just from a few days back. But, you know, it's, and I tell you what, I mean, there's a lot of people that have forward-facing sonar, people that don't. The things that we're learning from using forward-facing sonar are also huge benefits as far as teaching to people that don't have it, right? You know, like trying to wrap your head around why use glide baits? Why a glide bait over a jig, for example? Why a glide bait over a live bait rig? Well, if you're running a live bait rig along the bottom on structure in 30 feet of water, and those fish are 7 feet up off the bottom to 15 feet up off the bottom, good luck with that. You know what I mean? And so that's the, you know, that's probably the it's almost like you'd call it an enlightenment as far as how much we've been able to learn in the next, in the last, say, 3 to 5 years. It's been profound. I mean, there's some things that we had assumptions of that we were able to verify with forward facing sonar, like fish spooking from the boat and, you know, just different things like that. But then there's other things that thinking, wow, we were kind of on the wrong track with our thinking, you know, or our theories or what we thought was happening, you know? And so that's the part that I think I find the most fascinating personally.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I definitely want to deep dive a little bit on the glide bait deal. I think that there's kind of some fun things to talk about there, but your point, going back to your early point there and you're expanding on it, talking about what the jig is doing, right? Like, you know, thinking about what our cadence was. And I even think about, you know, what we're learning with forward sonar is giving a lot more context
to the whole, like, say, mono versus braid conversation or fall rates with different line diameters, right? Like,
yeah.
We used to kind of say, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the guy jigging with mono had a better day than I had, but then tomorrow that changes. Like, I feel like it gives a lot of context to that conversation too, because now we're kind of seeing how that jig reacts when you pop it a little bit and it lifts four feet off the bottom. Do you find yourself considering, like, your gear choices maybe a little bit more thoughtfully? Do you find yourself using mono versus braid or different line diameters maybe just a little bit differently nowadays?
You know, if anything, I think I've kind of settled into I've really settled into some things. Does that make sense? Like, I love pitching jigs in the spring, like, say, a jig and a minnow bite early in the year. Jigging live bait, I'm a big, big fan of mono. But you know what? If I have to pitch a jig using forward facing sonar, for example, when we were just on Lake Winnie, you know, there was some wind that came up throughout the day. And so you're, you know, throwing light jigs upwind because you're pretty much always casting upwind just so that you can use the, you know, the trolling motor to kind of control the boat and then line up on fish and keep the hold the boat in a kind of a stationary position while you're trying to catch a fish. So you're almost always casting upwind. And, you know, I'm a real big fan of, like, a real thin diameter, a high strand count braid. Like, I'm a big fan of, well, I used Nanofill a lot and they discontinued that. And then that Suffix 832 is kind of what I've settled into the last couple of years. And so there's some things that I've become pretty dogged on, right? Where, okay, jigging live bait, big fan of mono. Live bait in general, I'm a big fan of mono. As these lakes have cleared up in some regions with zebra mussels and everything, you know, 6-pound mono specifically. I feel like in that really clear water, you know, even sometimes a slip bobber splash, it can spook fish. And so, you know, it's really gone back to a finesse game in some fisheries. But then there's other things I'm pretty dog about, like I know some really good anglers, for example, like to use glide baits with mono. They're pitching them up shallow, like places like Leech Lake. I'm more of a braid guy. I use a lot of fire line, I would say, it'd probably be the line I'm using the most. I like the old fire line. They changed some things a couple of years ago, and so the new fire line, it works, but I'm not as much of a fan as what the old fire line was. But then I always put a small, tiny barrel swivel, and then you know, a 3-foot leader. I feel like that tiny swivel is important, although it does get to be a pain for casting because you can only reel your, you know, you don't want to reel your swivel up through your guides. Okay. And so, you got to, you know, live with casting with 3 feet of line on all the time, which isn't ideal, but I feel like if I don't have that tiny swivel, you get so much twist in the line that, when you chase that bait down on slack line, it wraps up on your guides, it wraps up on your rod tip, and that it costs you fish. There's no way around it, you know. And so I'm a big fan of using that swivel. And I also like to, I mean, I know some really good anglers that tie a small crankbait snap and then use that on their glide bait. And they catch fish, it works for them. And so, you know, it's whatever works for you. But I'm a big fan of tying a palomar knot directly to the glide bait. I feel like I can kind of control that knot placement a little bit, and then it doesn't fall forward and get caught on, like, the front or the back hook, which I don't know. I mean, I've caught a lot of fish on jigging wraps. I feel like if you're a glide bait person or glide bait guru, there's just times and places where, for whatever reason, that jigging wrap it gets it done, you know. But also, there's an assortment of glide baits that are available today that are really good. I'm a big, big fan of that pitching puppet. Okay, it's got an oversized hook and an oversized fin on the back. And I find that I almost learned this by accident, but I feel like that pitching puppet works really, really good with a more subdued jig stroke. And so, for example, if you're guiding, for example, if you had, like, maybe some older people that just physically can't snap that rod all day, or maybe some kids that just, you know, don't have that stamina on their wrists and their arms, I feel like that pitching puppet's a little bit easier bait to work, where you can get away with a much softer, more subdued hop. And I think it's because the fin's bigger. And I like that oversized hook as far as you get that big hook in them and it's over, you know, whereas those other baits have really small, tiny hooks on the front and on the back. I don't like that. You know, they just feel like a lot of fish come unbuttoned. But the pitching puppet is a phenomenal glide bait that, in my opinion, should be any glide bait angler's box. Johnny Darters, you don't hear people talk about those much. I think Johnson makes those, which is a Pure Fishing Berkeley product. That's a good one just because it fishes heavy and it's got rattles. On the reservoirs, that can be a really good one. There's some that I've just never been able to get to work for me. And I know it's probably me. I mean, I know other people catch fish on them, you know, but hyperglides, I've never been able to get that to work for me very well, but it's probably more me. What else is a good one? Well, shiver minnows. I've caught some fish on shiver minnows, but I've just never fell in love with them. But I know people that do really, really well with them. And so some of it is just confidence, cadence. Maybe there's different bodies of water, or for whatever reason, the fish seem to tune in on one thing versus the other. Goodness. Kika minnows, I've caught some fish on those. Boy. You know, then obviously puppet minnows, which are very similar to a jigging wrap and a tika minnow. What else is there? There's a lot of new ones now. I know Walleye Nations Creations has one. PK has a glide bait. Now, I mean, there's a lot of them now. There's a lot of good options now, where 20 years ago we had, what, Nils Master and Rapala.
Yeah.
I mean, it's come a long ways. But, you know, it's a fun, effective way to catch fish come midsummer. I mean, just because of what you can do throughout the water column when you see fish, you know. And I would say, I mean, it's not a finesse deal, right? I mean, it's more of an aggressive power fishing style, whether you use forward facing sonar or not. But, you know, one of the things I like about glide baits, you know, especially like on the reservoirs and places like Devil's Lake, is typically, you know, you've got some aggressive fish, you know, you got to hunt them down and find them. And they cast so well upwind. You know, we're talking about having to cast upwind. I mean, you take a glide bait and goodness, if your buddy is using, say, a quarter ounce jig and a half crawler, and you see a fish show up at 50 feet and you're just trying to get lined up on it, you're getting there way before your buddy. You know, no, that isn't always good, but a lot of days it is.
TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Check out a complete listing of products at TKICNC.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKICNC. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. You know, gosh, you know, 3-4 years ago, you look at the tournament scene and, you know, the whole glide bait craze, you know, was the end all be all here, like, you know, 3-4 years ago. But there's a lot of people that have gotten into the forward sonar game in the last 3 to 4 years that were still, you know, trying to figure out their confidence with these things. So I feel like there's still so much of these conversations to have, but we've kind of, and maybe I'm picking on the tournament scene now, a lot of podcasts I've done lately, it's like that jig and crawler, you know, is ruling a lot of these conversations with these guys. But this glide bait conversation is definitely not done. And there's a ton of anglers, you know, that need to hear, like you just said, the castability of these things. We can't forget just some of the basic rules of engagement here as to why this is like super effective. And so, yeah, like even just like even more like scenarios of like where you think, you know, this glide bait, you know, this summer patterns and the glide bait, where why that melds so good together. I don't know if, you know, maybe devil's egg. I know you fish all over, so whatever your best examples are, but I love the situational stories with this summer patterns and these glide baits.
Yeah, and some of it is that you have to gauge the reaction of what most of the fish are doing, right? And sometimes we'll see it where right away in the morning, the fish are just on and they'll chase a glide bait. They'll pin it on the bottom. Oh, you got a piece of it, but then you pop the glide bait away and it's still coming after it and you catch it. You know, sometimes I like to use glide baits over a cleaner bottom. Okay. And so if you have to drop it down into snags or if you have to drop it down into slime, it just isn't as efficient as a jig in a plastic that with the plastic floats and it keeps your hook up, like say a stand-up jig in a or like a eye candy jig and night crawler, for example, or a Ned rig type bait where you have only one hook and you've only got the head falling into the slime versus the whole package, you know, on a glide bait. Then there's other times where, you know, the fish won't chase it down and you got to make the fish come up and then you're okay. The fish are 10 feet down. I'm going to set a slip bobber at 7 feet or 6 feet and make the fish come. You just have to react to what you're seeing. You know, there's no end all be all. There's no, well, when this happens, do this. Like you can think that and say that, but then you're going to get all kinds of situations where you're wrong. And so why even say it? Like you see something and then you try to react to it. Now, when the fishing's good, a lot of things work. You know, you can do all kinds of different things, you know, and that's one thing that's really interesting too about forward facing sonars. There's days for whatever reason where the fish just make you look good. I mean, you see it where you get within 5-10 feet of a fish and it's blowing you up. Like, I don't know where my jig is. Oh, bam. I mean, you just see this fish, this flash, this move. I mean, it's like a rifle getting shot, how fast those fish react when you get inside that fish's bubble and they're going to gun you down, you know, and almost every fish you encounter is that way. You think, wow, I'm the greatest fisherman on the planet. Well, then the next day you go out and you throw on fish. You're like, golly, are they walleyes? Are they what's going on here? You know, and they're just cocked a little bit different. And then all of a sudden you get 1 out of 10 that just eats. And it's like, oh, you know, you got to cast at 10, 12 fish to get one to bite, you know, and you trying different things. And at the end of the day, you catch fish doing all kinds of different things. But it was a percentages deal or 1 out of 10, 1 out of 12. Would chase or follow or bite, and the rest of them are just whatever reason they just didn't want to eat. Maybe they just got done eating, you know. Maybe, I mean, fish don't eat every day of every minute, you know. They binge. They're opportunistic, and an opportunity presents itself, and it just stuffs itself as full as possible with the least amount of energy possible, and then it waits for the next window, you know. And when you're in between those windows on the wrong side, you know, sometimes fish don't make you look good. And so you see a lot of that with forward facing sonar too. And so you're just trying to adapt and react, you know. Jig and a crawler is probably one of the gold standards, in part because night crawlers don't dry out as much. Okay. You can dip it in the water every once in a while to kind of keep it fresh. They're very symmetrical on the hook. You can shove it up on a barb and they stay pinned up pretty good and they cast well. They don't tangle up very much. They're pretty, I don't want to use the word idiot proof because there's a lot of guys that definitely aren't idiots using them. I can tell you that. I mean, some of the best wall anglers on the planet are riding that horse, you know, to the finish line. Right. But it's just like less goes wrong with it. It's like an efficiency thing. Whereas, you know, you take a leech and it, you know, it just doesn't hold up for as many casts. For example, if it gets a little kittywampus on your hook, it really tumbles and looks bad in the water. They die quick. Once they're dead and they get limp, they're just not the same. You know, there's just different things not to like, right? But then there's other days where you have to use a jig and a leech, or you know, or a slip bobber and a leech, you know. And so it's kind of a deal where fishing is we can talk as smart as we want, right? You can read all everything you want, you watch every video, whatever. But when you're on the water and that sun's beating on your forehead, you know, at the end of the day, fishing is the process of elimination when things aren't working. You know, trying different spots, trying different presentations, and you're just tweaking things and trying different things until you figure out something that those fish will eat. And the more confident you are with more things, you have more of a chance, right? Like there's people that are really good anglers, but they're one trick ponies. They only fish one way. And if the fish aren't biting on that, good luck, you know. And come midsummer, I feel like you have to be more of a chameleon. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to change and pivot and just not care what you have to do to catch fish, you know? And so, yeah, it might be glide baits the next hour, the next day, whatever. It might be scaling down to the lightest jig you can and see if you can push in that 20 to 30 foot range so you can make a good cast at a fish and let it fall real slow and let it fall all the way down to the bottom and just let it sit there for a little while. You can see that fish is tilted up almost vertical up and down. You give it a little shake and you just feel them hit it, suck it right out of the bottom. And then there's other days where, you know, it's a slip bobber. I've seen days where, for whatever reason, casting at fish was just like pulling your hair out, but then you drag through them with something. And for whatever reason, the fish seemed to like that. You know, we saw that on Sakakawea this spring when you and I were out there during that front. Remember that?
We were
casting at so many fish and like we couldn't get them to move. But they just showed enough movement and enough profile where that these are walleyes, you know. And so then finally we went, okay, I guess we got to resort to, you know, the old tried and true Lindy rig. And then we started catching fish pretty consistently. Like, okay, this is what they want today, you know, a Lindy rig and a long snell and a minnow. Just dragging through them, you know, at a slow speed. Go figure. You know, what's old is new, right? That's caught a few fish in the years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you try different things, you know, and sometimes, you know, and probably the hardest decision to make, and it's something we're all wrong at times, is okay, you're dealing with fish that just are being very difficult, and they've ignored a handful of things you've tried. Do you just go try to find a new pot of fish, or do you try to find one more thing before you throw in the towel, you know? And then the day can get away from you, you know? And so that's the tricky part, is at some point you got to make those fish meet you halfway. Like, okay, you know, maybe they would have bit red tails and maybe they would have done this, maybe they would, but at some point you just, you know, once you get outside of that, you know, the handful of things that you have confidence in that should work most days, sometimes you just have to find a new pot of fish, you know? And that's probably the biggest thing with forward facing sonar. One of the hardest lessons that I have to keep relearning is don't die on that hill. Like if you have fish and they're following it, but they're just not eating, they're just making it look bad. At some point you have to leave fish to find fish a lot more with forward-facing sonar, whereas I would say pre-forward-facing sonar, it was almost a cardinal sin to leave fish to find fish. Mm-hmm. Like that's what the amateurs that hadn't spent a lot of time on the water yet, that's what they did. They run around, do this, do that, whatever, and the guys that had the experience said, no, I'm just going to wait this out. They'll bite. If I can average a fish an hour, and then I'm going to get my little window here where these fish open up, and you come in at the end of the day with great live well full of fish. And the people that were just, you know, we call it patience, right? Patience was a virtue. Whereas with forward facing sonar, I feel like it's okay to be impatient. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
That's just my observations. Maybe I'm learning all the time too. Like this is a fast changing world right now where the things that I thought about forward facing sonar, even 2 years ago, it's like, man, I was wrong on that. You know, like I remember thinking when I first started using forward facing sonar that, wow, this is pretty cool. This is interesting. This is helping me catch fish and incorporating them in my fishing, but then thinking to myself, yeah, but you know what? I still got to use 2D sonar or side imaging in order to find fish because I just don't feel like I can move fast enough I get bogged down in spots too much, you know? And so I thought, okay, it's great for catching fish, but use the other stuff to find fish, you know, the 2D sonar, the side imaging, what have you. And I feel like, you know what, that was, in hindsight, I was wrong on that. Like, forward-facing sonar is an awesome tool for finding fish. The problem is that when I first started using it, I had it on a pole, and that can be tough because, you know, you're not an octopus. You only have so many hands. You got hands to fish with, cast with. You got your foot on the foot pedal. How do you control that pole, you know? And then once I put that that forward facing sonar transducer on the shaft of the trolling motor. I was like, whoa. Yeah, you can find fish with this. This is the best thing ever, you know. And so we're evolving all the time, and there's definitely people that have evolved, you know, quicker or they're ahead of me. I'm just, you know, looking around thinking, wow, I gotta catch up. And you know, and it's funny, like in the bass world, there's so much drama and controversy and garbage, you know, as far as people, you know, pitting one group of anglers against. In the walleye world, it's quiet. It's like nobody cares. Like it's like walleye anglers have relied on technology their entire lives, right? GPS mapping, spot lock on trolling motors, you know, ice fishing, you know, I mean, there's discussions and conversations to be had, especially like with barrel trauma with muskies. And I mean, there's some things to talk about and things to think about and in concerns, but by and large, when you look at like walleye anglers in the Midwest, it's like, oh no, technology. We've been using that a long time.
Oh yeah.
We came from, cane poles and lazy Ikes driving in a circle along the weed edge. And I mean, you got to remember walleye. I was like, we don't know how to throw cast bait casters anyway. So we got
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. I want to narrow this down because I got a couple of questions that are kind of melded into one, probably for an answer, but like, you know, in the summer months, and we're talking about these patterns, and you've brought up, you know, we're talking about the glide bait deal or jigging in a crawler, and you're mentioning, you know, you got to have a process. Try not to care too much about how you're going to catch them. Just, you know, do whatever you got to do. And you've mentioned lead cord, and like how I want to kind of construct that into like a more defined for you, you know, your process. Do you start, you know, again, just talking about, you know, the summer patterns that we're mentioning already, and maybe Devil's Lake is the example, I suppose, you know, where you're at affects your answer, but, you know, do you start aggressive and work your way down to finesse, or maybe what are some conditions where you would start finesse and maybe, you know, slowly put your foot on the gas? And what is kind of your roster or, so to speak, of your presentations, like what you consider to be finesse and sort of your process of like how you would work your way up, and maybe just sort of some stories or examples that would depict that, like what you're seeing from a reaction from the fish and what would make you go from, say, a jig and a crawler or a jig and a minnow to the glide bait or vice versa, like maybe sort of like a constructed example. It can be hypothetical, but I know you do a lot of fishing, so maybe just, you know, some stories or examples that would show the process of a day where you would break down, you know, that type of a bite.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I honestly, I probably don't have it as figured out as much as you'd think. Okay. Sometimes I get bored doing one thing, so I do something different just to do something different. Okay. Like I just love learning about fishing. I love, like, I go fishing all the time by myself and people are like, yeah, I want to go with. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Chances are I'm going to fish longer than what you want to do. And, I'm not going to have anything to eat or drink. And so you're going to be complaining about that. And then, you know, and a lot of times I'll spend the whole day doing something I know, like I know where I could go and what I could do to catch fish, but I want to try this, mm-hmm. you know, just to see, you know? And so like, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. I enjoy that. I enjoy, you know, like I'll check new, like I'll like, golly, I've never fished this, you know, or I see it a different way one day. Or I always thought, okay, this point, it kind of comes off and I've caught fish there, but there's nothing special about it. But then one day I just look at that piece of structure I've driven by 1,000 times and I look at it a little differently. And, huh, I never thought about this. And I never realized it did this over here. And then I'll explore it, you know? So I just, you know, a lot of my fishing when I'm by myself, I'm just trying. I always joke, I try a lot of things that don't work, you know, just to see, you know, but I feel like that's how I can keep learning. You know, whether it's new baits, new techniques, whatever. And it depends on the conditions and it depends on what's going on, right? Like say if I got a, you know, like say if I donate a fishing trip, right? And I'm talking to the people, because I don't do any guiding anymore, but every once in a couple days a year, I get to pretend to be a guide again and talk to the people. Maybe it's a guy and young son, right? And I know that they, just from talking to them, maybe they only get to fish a handful of times a year. And I'm not going to, you know, why stand on the front of the boat and cast at fish where they're not going to be able to cast all day and stand on the front of the boat all day. It's not going to be fun for them. They don't want to watch me catch 10 fish and, you know, maybe it's a perfect situation to pull bottom bolsters and spinners, or maybe troll lead core, you know, and, or maybe it's a deal where it's really, really windy and they go, man, it's going to be really tough to line up and keep the boat where I need it to keep it because these fish are really spread out. You know, I mean, there might be certain situations where I don't want to use forward facing sonar game. I want to, you know, go back to some of the other stuff, trolling cranks. And that's still big. I mean, tell you what, like I'm 50 years old. So if you're 50 years old or close to that age and say you want to take your dad out fishing over a weekend and he's bringing your brother who fishes once a year, you know, the forward facing sonar thing might not be the answer to a good time. It might not. I mean, is your dad going to stand up there next to you all day in the 2 foot, 3 foot waves and trolling motors coming in and out of the water and you're trying to line up on fish and then make a perfect cast? No, right? But you can have the time of your life just anchoring and watching slip bobbers go under or trolling lead core. Or, you know, there's all kinds of different things that might be better, right? As far as just having fun. And that's why we fish, is to have fun. And so there's different things for different situations. As far as finesse, you know, I don't use live bait unless I have to. I would start off by saying that. If I can get away with, an eye candy or soft plastic, where I just like the efficiencies of it, I like the fact that, you know what, I mean, I never have enough ice in the boat. I never have, like, I'm not good on bait. I have to buy bait every day because the bait from 2 days ago is dead. Okay. So if I can get away without having to use live bait, I hate worm bedding. I hate worm dirt on my carpet. I hate it on my hands. I just hate it, you know. But you know what? There's times where I got to have it. There's times where I got to use it. There's times where you can pull your teeth out and put live bait on, catch fish, you know. And so I use live bait when I have to. When the other stuff doesn't work, I use live bait. There's times where the other stuff doesn't work. Like people say, oh, you know, soft plastics outfish live bait, or it's as good. No, there's no such thing as anything outfishing anything or as good. I mean, that's the dumbest thing to think, is that that's like saying, oh, you know, night crawlers outfish leeches. I'm like, no, there's days where the fish, for whatever reason, want it a certain way, and then there's other days where the fish want it a different way, you know, and it's up to you to figure it out, you know. And so I don't use live bait unless I have to. But I'm telling you, there's a lot of days where I do have to, you know, and it feels like more so when you get clear water, where it's like the fish can inspect it a little more and they just get a little bit better look at it. And then also fisheries where there's lower population densities of fish and they're not competing against each other so much. Those are two situations where I feel like if you're not using live bait, it could be a real, real struggle. And so those are just my observations. You know, it's kind of like decoys, waterfall hunting, right? When it's dark, you're in the right spot and you got really strong winds. It's keeping the birds low and you know, everything is perfect and you can get by with some really rough looking decoys where the flocking's all gone and silhouettes are leaning on their side, whatever. You can get away with all that. But when the conditions change, maybe the birds come at from a higher angle. It's the middle of the day where the decoy spread is really lit up and there's good visibility and you don't have the wind directing what the birds see and the sun isn't in the bird's face anymore. There's different things that line up where now all of a sudden your decoys look like crap. So you better have some good decoys. That's kind of how our presentation is. There's certain situations, certain things where, you know, where presentations, you can fish it fast enough, the fish are aggressive enough where they're responding to it, where, you know, there's efficiencies that come from getting away from live bait. Like I'm pulling spinners and harnesses a lot with eye candy, especially around weeds and little perch and stuff like that, just because you catch 20 fish on one leech. You know, and it's got an awesome flutter. It floats. There's like a lot of things to love about it. You know, if I can get away with pulling a harness at 1.3 miles an hour or faster, and that thing is really fluttering, it's like the fish don't have a lot of time to analyze it. You put the rod in the rod holder, that rod tip is banging and the rod tip's out in the water. You pick the rod up out of the rod holder and reel in a very nasty, angry walleye, right? It doesn't get any easier, okay? But when you have to slow down, when you have to do certain things to adapt to what the fish, because the fish won't do what you want them to do, you can't force the fish to do anything. And then all of a sudden, there's situations where a half crawler and slow death is what the fish want or whatever. You know, you got to keep your options open. You know, narrow-mindedness is, it's good to have, narrow-mindedness can be kind of a curse with fishing where you have to have things that you're really, really confident in. You definitely fish better with what you're confident in. But what happens is that you can get so focused and narrow that you're only confident in one or two things. That is dangerous. Now, granted, there's things, if you're going to get confident, if you're going to have narrow-minded focus and confidence, you better go with a live bait rig and live bait or a jig and minnow. I mean, those things are just such big fish catchers throughout the year, at least the first half of the year. But then now you get into midsummer and, you know, when things get tougher, it's like the more things you have in your toolbox, I just feel like you're just so much more prepared to be able to react to what the fish don't do or do. Does that make sense? I mean, you know, just swallowing your pride and enjoy that process of learning. It's like there's nothing cooler and funner than like, oh, putting another arrow in your quiver. You know, it's like, you know, having just different things you're confident in is dangerous, you know? We've all evolved, right? I remember being a linear rig guy. I mean, I grew up back trolling with a tiller. I can still smell that two-stroke smoke going through my nose. I still love the smell. The waves hitting the splash guards in the back of the tiller and drift sock out the front. I still fish that way. You know, I mean,
oh yeah,
never leaves you, right? And then having a Lindy rig and a, you know, 6-pound mono and the bail open and my finger on the line, and I had my worm blower and just putzing along with my drift sock, and I'd have my marker buoy out on my spot and just enjoying the good life, right? I enjoy that. That's how I grew up fishing. I loved doing that. I mean, that was my confidence thing, you know, and then getting confident with a jig, you know, and then goodness, and soft plastics came on the scene, and then getting confident with jigs and soft plastics. Then the trolling thing came, and then the line counters and the planer boards, the lead core, bottom balls, there's all this different stuff. Is like learning that and embracing that for me personally brought a lot of joy. I mean, it brought a lot of joy as far as just figuring things out and learning and you know, people fish for a lot of different reasons. And I'm not saying that there's any wrong reason to fish as long as you're ethical and you're a good human being. But I think for me, the real satisfaction just comes from, you know, you face a little adversity, right? We've all had our teeth kicked in out on the water by a fish that's got the brain the size of a peanut, you know, and, you know, and having that humility, right? And then doing this and doing that, and changing this, learning that. And then all of a sudden it's like scoring a touchdown in the fourth quarter when you've been behind all game, you know, like there's a feeling of accomplishment that I think is almost like a high. That's really what, you know, for the people that love to fish, I think that resonates where it's like, it really makes people tick is figuring all the different pieces of the puzzle and then putting it all together. And there's like a feeling of satisfaction that is just, to me, the most addicting, alluring thing there is about angling. You know, I don't care if you're a bass angler, a wall angler, multi-species, whatever it is, but figuring out all those different pieces and putting it together really adds joy, a lot of joy to fishing. And it's really what sets it over the top as far as just being obsessed with it, you know. And one of the fun things about this time of year is there are a lot of things that you can do that you can get good at that, you know, can help you, you know, getting competent with running big minnows, for example. That in itself is an art, you know, figuring out where to catch them. Okay. Where can I find some red tails and creek chubs? Cause nobody's going to tell you. right?
Right.
I mean, there are certain things that are tough. Like where are you shooting those big deer? Where are you finding your morel mushrooms? And then next up the mountain is of difficulty is where are you catching your creek chubs and red tails?
Yeah.
Right. But like catching the minnows, which is fun. Right. And then taking care of the minnows. Because there's no minnow like a wild minnow that you just caught. I mean, that's like using kryptonite, right? I mean, it's just, wow, what a difference that makes. And then fishing those big minnows, you know, that's an art to learn, to master that, is deadly this time of year. You know, it's like you with those big minnows, you don't just have to find the fish. The fish seem to find you.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and then you've got the glide bait stuff. You've got the, you know, all the different things with trolling, whether it's long lining, deep baits, snap weights, goodness, in some places might even include dipsy divers, or, you know, Lake of the Woods might even include downriggers, lead core, segmented lead core, planer boards. I mean, there's just so much you can dive into and learn and grow, you know. Then you've got, you know, your classic, you know, your slip bobbers, your jigs, your jigs and plastics, your jig and half crawler, all that different stuff. Then you've got the forward facing sonar component, you know. And it's like, you know, when you look at all these different things, it's like, if anything, the playbook gets opened wide up, right?
Yeah.
Whereas like me, in first part of June, it's like, okay, you're on the 20 yard line, there's only so many plays you can run. And you kind of know what they're going to be. But when you get into July and August, it's like you're on the 0 yard line because you botched the kickoff and you got tackled on the 0-1 yard line. You should have just taken a knee, right? But it might be more daunting. Obviously, you've got a lot more yards to cover to get down the field. But talk about fun. You've got the whole playbook. You can run every play. That's what's so fun and so great about midsummer this time of year. Is that you can run the whole playbook. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah, I like that. That's phenomenal. It's like motivating. It's like whatever process you decide, make sure you're finding satisfaction and enjoying it, because...
Oh, for sure. That's why we do this. Absolutely. And for some people, it's different things, right? I mean, there's no right or wrong. I'm not going to talk down anybody or say that anybody's doing it wrong. You're not. If you're having fun, you know, I mean, I know guys that, you know what, all they do is slip bobber, and they've got two really little kids, and you know what, they're having the time of their life. And you know what, maybe 10 years from now, those kids are taking dad out and they want to fish a league or whatever. And, you know, and oh, we need to do this, we need to try that. And they're all growing together and having fun together. That's all great. Fishing is good for people. You know, it truly is. And as long as you're finding enjoyment and finding that peace you're having fun, that's all that matters, you know?
Yeah, dude. One thing, this will be our closer, but man, if I were to look back and, you know, our time together, you fish a lot more derbies now, you know, you do the local stuff, you know, you fish the Van Hook Classic and, you know, but you're finding time to fish more derbies, and I know you're liking it. What do you get out of like a little bit of that competition, you know, in what you've been doing lately, you know, from a fishing standpoint or the camaraderie or whatever it is, but you know, you're fishing a few more of those competitions.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, I've never been like anti-tournament or down on tournaments ever. Just that, like when I was guiding, it was just so hard to guide every day and then take a week off to pre-fish and then fish a tournament. And if you don't do that and treat it like that, you're not going to do well fishing your guide spots, you know? And so I just didn't have time, you know, and maybe there's certain points in my life where, you know, when you're guiding every day, it's a grind. You got to go every day to make a living. It's like, oh yeah, I can't afford to take a week off in June. That's like one of our busiest weeks all year. You know, why would I turn down, you know, $6,000-$7,000 in guiding income when I could, you know, and fish a tournament where, you know, and so it's not for everything or everybody, and that's fine. I enjoy fishing some, and I just fish a handful of them. I mean, I'm not a big tournament fisherman, but I enjoy it. Some of it is I enjoy seeing the people. I going out to Van Hook, you know, I've got a lot of great friends out there, you know, great fishermen. I always feel like I learned something. I feel like sometimes, you know, doing television all these years, we've been doing TV for almost 20 years, And I feel like it's easy to get complacent with fishing, where, you know, you're using sponsor lures, you're doing this to film a show, and you know, with tournaments, you know, it's kind of like anything goes. We're going to a different body of water, and we're just using whatever we have to use to catch fish. And I kind of enjoy that. And I enjoy, you know, it's kind of opens your eyes and maybe, you know, broadens what you think you know, a little bit. I enjoy the challenge of having to fish that day, right? Which obviously whenever you fish, you're fishing that day. But, you know, I don't know, there's people that are really good at pre-fishing. That's all they talk about. All fishing, oh, yeah. Caught pre-fishing, you know, but it's a whole different deal when, you know, when you don't have it on the line and you get to fish good spots or do things where there's nobody else, right? But then you take a week of pre-fishing, you take the tournament itself, and all those fish have been sore mouthed, or a lot of them have, whatever. And it's like, all of a sudden, you know, you're not as good as you hoped, you know? And, so I enjoy the challenge. It's not like I'm out to beat anybody. Like I don't have a beef with anybody. I like most of the guys that I'm fishing with or against. I mean, I consider most of them friends, and maybe that day that you'd call them frenemies. Right. But, I like all these guys, right. But to me, it's like an internal thing where it's against the fish, like figuring out the situation and the conditions, where it's you versus the fish, you versus that day. And however you do, you do. And I feel like it forces you to learn at a little bit more accelerated level, because there's a certain amount of humility that gets shoved down your throat with fishing tournaments, where I don't know if anybody could be so humiliated by self-infliction. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Self-infliction, where, like, you know, you go out and have a tough day or whatever in the fishing. Well, yeah, I did this. Well, I could have done that. I could have did it over there or whatever. Like, you know, you have all kinds of reasons and excuses. You can justify it, right? Whereas with tournaments, you know, it's like you start talking that way and you just sound like the biggest whiner on the planet. Yeah. So you just keep your mouth shut and realize that, you know what, I got more to learn here. Like we got to get better at this. Like we're not taking this seriously, or we got to do this better, you know? And, you know, my partner and I, we've evolved that way, you know, certain things where, you know, 5 years ago, whatever, you know, think we had to do it this way. And, you know, like, and you know what, maybe we got to look at it from a different light, you know. And in one of the things that we're trying to do is, you know, be more comfortable fishing around more boats, whereas we always ran small tillers, so we were always the slowest boat going anywhere. So we really prided ourselves and spent a lot of time trying to find little things that people would miss, that where we'd be by ourselves. And we did really good fishing spots where we were by ourselves, you know. And then, you know, now he's got a little bit bigger, faster boat. Still a tiller, but thinking, well, you know what, maybe that's hurting us. Maybe we got to realize that, you know, in Van Hook, we might have to fish spots that have names, you know, and it's, you know, whatever, but you know, it forces you to grow. And then you have fun with that, right? You were talking about earlier about how much fun learning is, you know, to me, tournaments are part of that. Now, one thing I'll say is some people turn into just whiny crybabies when they don't do good in a tournament, you know? And, geez, you know, so down and negative and stupid excuses, you know? And, you know what, if you can't stand losing, don't ever sign up for a tournament. Because you're going to, you know, just don't. Like if you're a poor, poor loser in a poor sport, and, you know, you really fancy yourself as the greatest angler ever, just don't sign up for a fishing tournament.
Yeah, you do yourself a favor.
Yeah, and do everybody else a favor too, right? You know, but don't, you know, and that's okay, right? Because I tell you what, anybody that's done good, that's ever won a tournament, or, you know, has had some good runs in tournaments, have had their teeth kicked in, you know? I mean, that's the reality, is that I don't know if there's such a thing as just falling from the sky and getting good at that, because, you know, there's a lot to learn. I mean, there's, you know, managing your time, just having confidence to go in and do certain things when you know there's going to be boats there, going into spots after you know people have fished, you know, all those different things that, you know, I don't know maybe there are people that are born with that. I don't know. I mean, there's some really young, good tournament anglers, you know. But, especially with forward facing sonar, I mean, goodness, the prime age of an angler is getting younger, and some of it's forward facing sonar. Some of it is just, there's so much good information, you know?
Yeah. And like the high school fishing leagues.
If you're nuts in high school about fishing, you can learn everything so quickly with all the information, whether it's YouTube or whatever it is. I mean, the learning curve is so much more dramatic. I think that's what isn't getting stated enough. People see a young angler, like in their early 20s, kick butt in a tournament, like, oh yeah, they're forward facing sonar, rah, 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 you know, and they complain and whine and cry about it, right? And it's such a shame, because some of these people aren't getting the kudos that they deserve, because they figured some things out, right? Whereas just having the coordination, you know, forward facing sonar isn't necessarily easy. Most people, I don't think, can even do it because they're not coordinated enough, you know, at least as far as casting and wind and different things like that. Identifying fish. I mean, there's a lot more to it than what people that have never used it want to acknowledge. But the other thing is that the learning curve is so fast. Yeah, there's the high school fishing leagues or whatever, but the learning curve is so fast, where what used to take, say, 15 years of hard fishing to figure some things out, now takes very little amount of time, because there's so much good information that's out there. And so instead of being down on the next generation, pat yourself on the back if you're part of the older generation, because the things that you figured out, the things that you've been able to share, and the information that's been garnered during that generation has been passed down to the next generation. And that's good, you know? And so, you know, pat yourself on the back, you know, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I look at my own life when I was 20 years old, 30 to 20 to 25 years old, you know, and I was listening to guys like Al Linder or Gary Roach, or, you know, guys that were, you know, Gary Parsons, you know, guys that were legends, that, you know, a lifetime of fishing, and they would give seminars, they would have articles written about them, or, you know, in some cases, you know, filming a TV show or whatever, where all that hard-earned wisdom they were sharing. And so then my learning curve accelerated, you know, and, you know, in the next generation, that learning curve is even more accelerated, because there's even more information and there's more ways of to distribute that information. And so it's just part of it's probably that way with everything in life, really. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. It's just, you can learn, if you put your head down, you can learn things really quickly, because the information can be found on your phone, you know? So
yeah,
that's my thoughts on that.
Man, the average age of a YouTube subscriber is going up, man. A lot of these 40, 50, 60-year-olds or people in retirement age are starting to figure out how to YouTube, man. That's,
Everybody is. Everybody's. Well, whatever you go, like, say if you want to fish a new lake, search it on YouTube. See what pops up. I mean, who wouldn't? I do it. I mean, or how to put together something, or, you know, the belt just broke on my riding lawnmower. I can hear it. Down there somewhere. You know what I mean?
YouTube, like
whatever it is, you know. Right now I'm sitting in my pickup talking to you. I'm going to activate some cell cameras. I'll be back on YouTube.
You know, yeah, dude.
Okay, what am I doing wrong here? I did this, and this, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just, and why not use it, right? I mean, you're a fool not to use it, especially when everybody else is using it, you know. So,
yeah,
it's the world we're in.
Yeah, dude, the passion for learning.
Absolutely.
That's exactly it. I appreciate, you know, being able to hang out with you, and I like, you know, I bring that up just because I want to give you kudos for, I like when you've been fishing derbies a little bit more the last few years, and it's been fun talking to you about it, and I know you're learning all the time. That's what's so, it's so tricky for me. It's like, you're my mentor. You're supposed to know everything. But it's like,
that's the thing, is that it'd be disappointing. I mean, no, I just feel days where I feel like I don't know anything, you know?
Yeah, but it's so impressive and just inspiring to see that, like, you know, it's not that the cool thing isn't in the answers, it's just, you know, the example that you set for being able to learn all the time is like, I need to pay attention to that and just be in that mindset.
Well, it's easy to be comfortable and to stay in your box, and you know what, I know enough to be dangerous, I don't need to do any more, and I have nothing to prove, whatever, and that's fine. But I don't know, I like learning, I like fishing, I like trying different things, I like the feeling, the satisfaction of figuring out something new, to me is almost like a drug, you know. And and you know, the little derbies that we fish, you know, they kind of maybe exaggerate that. I mean, we've done terrible in derbies. I'm not, we don't dominate,
but
we've won some.
But you learn a lot then usually.
No, but yeah, we learn. There's always something to take away from. We've won some. We've done good and we've done not so good. You know, sometimes we can point to something really specifically and say, oh, this is what cost us. This mistake right here is, you know, we can look at that in hindsight. And there's other times where we can reflect in hindsight. I mean, I don't know what went wrong. Like nothing went right. Like we were on a completely different, like we were on a different dimension. Right. And there's something we learned from that too. You know, in fact, I've even had to where if I did bad in a tournament, I would just stay another day or two just to try to figure out some things to get my confidence up. So that way, when I came back there, I felt better about it. You know, I don't know. I mean, I just, you know, but no, I think the most fun for me is just seeing all the guys and talking to them. I mean, most of them I consider my friends, you know, and then seeing what it takes to win. One thing you can tell about a tournament is that no matter how tough the fishing is, no matter how many bugs are hatching, no matter how many smelt there are, no matter how bad the weather is, no matter how much the water temperature dropped, no matter what happens, somebody always figures something out. And that's a incredible learning opportunity, not just for the boat that wins, but for everybody else around there that got to see it and watch it, you know. And there's a lot that you can take away from it that way. Even if you don't want to fish a tournament, that's fine. And there's a lot of good local tournaments. You don't have to sign up for some big.
Yeah, that's kind of, those are kind of my favorite, is like the local derbies because they're so tough.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, you know, sign up for some tournament and think, you know, go up against Tom Wynn and John Hoyer and Dewey Gillman and Max Wilson, you know, I mean, like going into a gladiator pit, but you could just sign up for a little derby, a club, or like there's some awesome clubs in North, like we've got Lake Region Anglers, right? Devil's Lake Club does a lot of awesome things for the fishing community in Devil's Lake region. They've got some fun derbies, just some fun, and great guys. Badlands Bass Bandits is another one. Great group of guys, really classy group of guys. I mean, I've seen times where, like, for example, there'll be a boat that you know is going to win the tournament and nobody moves in on them. You know, like these guys really show each other a lot of respect, you know, and, you know, it's kind of a deal. You know what? I didn't pre-fish this. You're here. I see you there. I'm not going to interfere with your tournament. Like there's some really, but you know, at the end of the day, they'll tell you, you know where they were. They'll tell you what they were doing there, you know. Well, then you walk away or you drive away from that tournament where you really learn something, you know. And so to me, that's what it's about. It's just trying to learn, you know, trying to learn more. Never think that you have it all figured out. You never know everything. Sometimes the more you know, the less you know, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some really cool opportunities around North Dakota. There's the AIM series, you know. There's you know, a lot of different tournaments that you can just stick your nose into, you know, just to try to figure out more about fishing. You know, you're going to get a water hose of information, you know?
Yeah.
But again, if you can't stand, you know, and when you lose, I've said this before, shake the person's hand that won, congratulate them. Don't be a whiny crybaby. Don't sit there, my motor broke down, and this happened, that happened, my creek chubs died. Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
my
blah,
creek chubs know. Died. Oof, that'd be a toughie.
There was 10 boats in my spot, or that, you know, it's like we've all, yeah, that happens to everybody. Like, just don't even say it. Like, just shake the person's hand and congratulate them. Lose like a man. So that way, when you win, they're not being whiny crybabies. You know, like, there is a certain, sportsmanship, I guess, that this entails, you know. You know, everybody that's ever fished tournaments has done really poorly. Like, you know, and some of it is, and you have to get past what people think or see, right? Like you might zero, well, but you weren't trying to catch 5 18-inch fish. You know, you spent too much time in a spot where you thought you'd catch a 26-inch fish and it didn't work out. By the time you thought, well, geez, I would take 5 18-inch fish, it's too late. Like you're going out there on a different mission than somebody that's just trying to catch fish, you know, especially like in North Dakota where you can't call, you know? And so you go out and you weigh 2 fish for 5 pounds and everybody in the campground's giving you a hard time or whatever. Like you have to let some of that roll off. Like you just can't even let it bother. Like, yeah, you know, I mean, you never know with fishing, you never make guarantees, but if I would have went to the community spot where everybody's catching their limit of 18 inches in the campground, and I could have done that too, but that wouldn't have done me anything, you know? And that's probably something too, is that, I mean, people fish. I mean, I know guys that fish tournaments, you know, they're fishing with their 10-year-old son and they just go for layups and they, you know, they finish middle of the pack and their son's excited. And you know what, that kid that's 10 years old now is going to be a stud angler when he's 30, you know, and kudos for the dad to have the patience and putting his own pride aside to do that, you know? And so that, to me, that's major props, major respect, you know? But then there's other people that, you know, they'll fish certain situations or do certain things knowing that they're going to catch 10 pounds with five fish and they'll never, ever catch a check, you know, and they're throwing fish in the live well in the morning that they know they'll never catch a check with just because they're worried that they don't want to fish. You know, if they finish 70th, they don't want to finish below the neighbor that's going to be an 80th. You know, it's not such a different mentality. I don't understand, but you know what, as long as they're having fun and you know what, it takes everyone, you know, to make a tournament work, you know? And so it's all good, but I never understood that, you know, the fish that some people keep right away in the morning, you know, it's not a contest of, you know, you got till 3 o'clock, use it, you know? So
you need donators though, a little bit every once in a while, you know, you need participants, but yeah, it takes all kinds.
Donators. I mean, I would never use that term. It's like, yeah, I've donated.
Everybody's wore that merit badge on their vest. No doubt about that. But yeah, man, it takes all kinds. And the whole derby scene now I feel like is definitely, you know, it's growing in popularity, you know, and the exposure, you know, if you include kind of the bass world into the conversation, guys like Sam Sobey doing that Tourney Tuesday series for years on his YouTube channel, super cool. You know, it's like whatever, 15, 20 boats and they're all tough sticks, you know, like the competition is all relative, but the learning, you know, the learning is there for the taking and for a little bit of a buy-in. You know, yeah, like the education that you can get as long as you're up for it and you're paying attention, you know, it you know, you can bomb a tournament, but the education, you know, the money can be very well spent for your career.
Yeah, you can take a lot from it if you, you know, you definitely can. I would encourage that for anybody. If you want to learn more about fishing, I think that is an avenue that you can take where you're just going to get your eyes opened. You know, it's a big world out there and there's a lot of good anglers. Like right now, I mean, there are so many great anglers, you know, I mean, I don't want to, maybe this sounds bad, but great anglers are a dime a dozen. Like there are so many great anglers. You look at like that river crowd down at Bismarck, how many great anglers that come out of there. Then you look at Sakakawea and Newtown and Van Hook and oh my goodness. And then you look at Devil's Lake and you look at Lake Oahe and, I mean, there are, wherever there's good fishing to create that fire and that passion, there are some great, great anglers that are just really good. And, you know, there's a lot to learn from all of them. Every great angler can teach you something. You'd be a fool not to absorb some of that. So,
yeah, man. Yeah, it's all out there. Well, I appreciate the catch up, Jay. I love it. We got to, you know, we always, you know, find time to do these, but this is one of those times where we waited a long time. You've done a lot of fishing, so I appreciate the catch up. And it is the time of year to open up the playbook and just get out there and get after it and just find satisfaction in it and in the passion. And a lot of learning is going to be happening by everybody. Just get out there and take advantage of the season. But yeah, it's that time of year where more and more people are licking their chops for it. And it's all good stuff, man. Well, I don't know. I think if anybody listened this long to the podcast, they probably know where to find your stuff on YouTube and your socials and everything. So I think we're probably pretty good there. You got any parting words or any sign-offs or anything like that?
No.
Right on, man. Dude, I love it. I love it. You know, to your last point, actually, you know, interesting that you said how many good anglers are. Seth Fighter was just on a podcast recently talking about the Elite Series, and he's like, you know, like 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, there was probably like 20 guys that were just, you know, so good that they would cash a check in every tournament. And and that was true. I mean, it was like statistically true. There was like 15, 20 guys that were going to make the cut every single tournament. And now, on that same level, there's like 60 or 70 guys. So the amount of people that are good enough to consistently cash a check in every tournament that aren't is
just about as much as, you know, 8-10 years ago as this was. Well, it's like an interesting point to make.
Maybe a better observation to make is that there's, you know, the guys, it wouldn't surprise you if they won it.
Yeah.
Right.
The number of contenders for the top spot each in, week in and week out.
It used to be where it was a much smaller crowd. No, there's just a lot of great anglers. There truly is. Which is awesome because there's so much more information. There's so much stuff you can learn. It just, you know, a lot of like-minded people, right? People that love fishing. Of course, they're going to be good at it. You know, a little bit of them can rub off on you. You can rub off on them. There's going to be certain things that they've seen or figured out that, wow, that's going to make my game better. You know, that's why we're all here, you know. So.
Totally. Yeah, man. Cool stuff, dude. Well,